These violent delights have violent ends.
Welcome to Violent Delights, a Westworld podcast. We are your hosts, Andrew Sorcini,
Dwayne D.
and Tosin Anofawaken.
We just watched the fourth episode of Westworld's third season titled The Mother of Exiles. We assume you have as well. Total spoilers ahead before we dive into the after talk. First, some online spots where you can get in contact with us. You can write to us or email us a voice memo at hbowestworldpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at hbowestworldpod or just hashtag Violent Delights. Our Facebook page is at Westworld Podcast. Add us on iTunes. Please like us, leave us a review. That's how we get noticed. All right, let's talk about The Mother of Exiles. This episode was written by Jordan Goldberg and Lisa Joy and directed by Paul Cameron, who is a cinematographer. And I think this might be one of his first directing stints. So obviously the cinematography in this looked just gorgeous, look on point. And the direction, I think, was great, too. Dwayne, why don't you give us a recap of the episode before we jump into breaking it down?
All right, bear with me here. There's a lot going on. Yeah. Three subplots, right? We begin with the man in black's dwelling. It's a mess, and so is he. He's lost control of understanding what's real and what's not. Drunk, barefoot, walking on broken glass, only one of his hands is working, and he's mourning the way he murdered his daughter. He's got a waking memory of his daughter, and she tortures him. The new Hale comes in and basically rescues William from killing himself. She lets him know that Serac is trying to take over the company, and after some initial indifference, he agrees to attend a shareholder meeting, whereupon he would use his influence with his peers, the other shareholders, to take the company private, keeping it from Serac. It turns out that she didn't actually have a meeting with the board for William to attend. Instead, she sets him up to be admitted into a private mental hospital, citing his delusions about his daughter and his violent behavior toward her, Hale, once he finds out that she's a host. We move on to Dolores and Bernard in a memory of Arnold's finished home. Bernard sees that Dolores has been busy making new bodies and wonders aloud about whom she may have brought with her from the island to put into those bodies. She demurs and doesn't answer him. Then we see a divergence at Victorville, USA. The divergences are interesting because they don't tell you a state. Victorville is not a state. And usually in the U.S., when you have an address, you say city, comma, state, comma, USA. And that's not happening here. Meanwhile, in the present, we find Bernard and Stubbs holed up in a motel where they plot how to stop Dolores with an instrument that pauses hosts, similar to the way that Serac froze Maeve. Talk about a security hole. Dolores and Caleb are planning to infiltrate some event. They suit up, and then they steal the blood from some private equity person in order to gain entry to a bank and steal a large amount of money from Dempsey. Later that evening, at a prostitution fundraiser, of all things, Dempsey finds that his account has been hacked. Before he can sort it out, Bernard and Stubbs surround him and attempt to escort him out of the party at gunpoint. Dolores, Caleb, and Connell's replacement are all there, and they're surprised that Bernard and Stubbs got to Dempsey before they could. Dolores assaults them, and Stubbs attempts to fend her off, but he fails. Serac and Maeve are in Singapore. Serac brings her online to discuss his offer to her. He updates her on the fact that Paris was destroyed sometime between our time and their time. He also lets her know that their interests are aligned. Serac knows that Dolores holds the only key to the Valley Beyond from Season 2, where Maeve's daughter is. If Maeve can stop Dolores, he can extract that key and let Maeve be with her daughter in that world. Serac takes Maeve to Arnold's home, where he shows her that Dolores has built 5 skin jobs, one each for the 5 HCUs or pearls that she stole. Serac has traced Dolores' infiltration of their world back to an identity broker whom she paid with the funds she stole from the wealthy investor in Season 1, Episode 3. Serac lets Maeve know that while heaven and hell aren't real for him, the dead information broker, that they're real for her. He tells her that he can put her in a hell-like prison for all eternity if she doesn't help them, or he can put her in heaven if she helps him find Dolores. He can extract the key. Maeve complies and forces her way in to see someone called the Mortician, who is one of the people who helped Dolores with the identities of the people she replicated. Maeve learns that the Mortician set up Dolores with a fake identity and sent her along to the Yakuza. Maeve tracks down the Yakuza. The Yakuza leader is Musashi, and he takes down Maeve. Then we find out that Connells, Musashi, and Hale are all copies of Dolores. And guy. Mm. Izzy Gusmier is, man, he was always going on these side quests, dude.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, in the tradition of like playing a video game, like a real life video game, Maeve is like the side quest queen. For sure. So initial impressions, guys. This is a jam-packed episode. This episode, you know, I feel like for the last three episodes beforehand, the not the main drive of the season, but one of the sort of filler questions that I feel like the showrunners have thrown our way to toy with is who's in whose pearl. And
I thought that was a huge part of the whole thing. It's the little mystery that that I feel like all of us were sort of. I mean, like we're geeks, right? So we're all
sure.
But I just feel like that was one of those things that, like, every week, that's what I was trying to figure out. Who's right. Inside. That was the game for
it's
me.
It's to keep so us occupied, was, okay. But it's not the main drive of this season. It's just sort of
the main drive is the destruction of humanity.
Right. So, man, like, first of all, I have to say, I think Tosin. Last week, on our episode last week, you kind of you brought up the idea that Dolores had duplicated herself into the Charlotte Pearl, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, all we're not worthy. We're not worthy. All praise Tosin, because Tosin was on fire last week, and then he dropped that, and I was like, that's totally. I mean, we hadn't seen anything that would establish the fact that people could do that. They all seemed kind of individual. They spent, you know, decades cultivating these mines inside these pearls in order to get them to where they were. But, you know, data is data, and she copied and pasted.
Man,
and
she did call out that she, like, you know, when she was cuddling Maeve, saying that she knew her, right?
Hail.
Sorry, yeah, cuddling Hale.
Not all black women look alike, Tosin.
Wow, ouch. unless they have Dolores all inside of them.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and, you know, I think well played, Dolores. Well played.
I got to say, though, guys, I think when Tosin, when you brought this idea up last week, I refuted it because I felt that doing that kind of breaks the established world. Like, we've established that these hosts are singular personalities. And so I'm kind of mad. I'm kind of mad at the showrunners for throwing this at us, because it totally undoes everything that we've established about this world. I feel like at this point, it's sort of like, this is like a conceit that now you can drop on us at any time. Like, any pearl can contain any host or any duplicate of any host. It just broadens the possibilities in an uncreative way, in a way that removes the restrictions from the narrative that I think should be there, so that not just anything can happen.
I gotta agree with you. So the thing before, so here's what kind of what happens.
Yeah.
If this isn't okay. So I've always thought that Westworld's showrunners cheated, right? Like, they cheated with the timeline stuff a little bit. Yeah. You know, they cheat here, they cheat there. And, you know, it's fine. It's entertainment, whatever. But part of building a great world is making sure that it has rules, soft rules and hard rules. Yeah. And when you break the soft rules, you know, when a character breaks the soft rules, like she levels up or something like that, it gets pretty exciting, right? Like, or like when Neo figures out he can fly, whatever, right? Like, it's within the rules. I guess it can happen. But this kind of felt a little bit like, okay, so they can make copies of themselves. Everyone's Dolores. It did two things for me. It took away from Dolores' character. She is someone who's always wanted her people to thrive, and yet this seems like it's about, at least on its face in this episode, it felt like it was all about her, which is not what I've seen in the past. You know, she was doing things to secure a future for everybody, right? And so this felt a little bit too Dolores focused. And then two, it's kind of like, okay, if this is going to happen, then like anything can happen. And then like trying to follow stuff doesn't make any sense, because they're just going to kind of do whatever they want to do and then retcon it later, kind of, you know what I mean? So
it was
a little heavy, but there was another moment that was kind of oh shit for me.
Yeah.
And this is when Maeve is in the distillery and. Yeah. She You know, she senses the guy with the gun, and she like manages to find a sword lying around. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then she stabs him, and out of the whiskey barrel oozes the substrate that creates the hosts. And I gotta say, like, as much as I kind of smiled in the corner of my mouth when I found out that everybody was Dolores, I was like agape. I was like, ooh,
right.
When I saw the goop come out of that thing, because I was like, that is a huge clue into what the actual plan is.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing for me. But obviously, what they wanted to hit us hard with, and you were talking about earlier, Andy, about how the editing was so tight. They wanted to hit us hard with the fact that everybody is Dolores, which is a cool gender bending thing.
Right.
In 2020.
Yeah. And they've done Westworld has done cross cutting things like that before on reveals. I think we had that when we revealed that William was the Man in Black. We had a little cross cutting between William.
He put his head down when his head came up.
Yeah. The old guy. Yeah. So it was nice to see the cross cutting between these three scenarios when the reveal happened as to who was each in each pearl, and it happened to be the same person in each pearl. But let's talk about the salient points about this episode. First of all, Tosin, why don't you tell us about the title, The Mother of Exiles?
Yeah, so the title of The Mother of Exiles is an alternative name for the Statue of Liberty. This is taken from Emma Lazarus' poem at the statue's base, The New Colossus, which goes as such. A mighty woman with a torch whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome.
And there's more to this poem, obviously, including like the lines that people know like the most is, you know, give me your tired, your weak, your
hungry.
Yeah.
Yearning to be free.
Yearning to be free. Yes.
That's the big thing. Give me your tired, your weak, your poor. I'm paraphrasing. Yearning to be free. And that's kind of a big piece of what's up here. You know, obviously these Dolores is currently neither tired nor weak nor poor nor hungry,
but she
does yearn to be free, and she is the mother of all these copies of her, so it kind of fits in.
But she's also, do you think that maybe she's also the mother, the spiritual mother of the exiles who have been sent to the valley beyond?
Yeah, I mean, she did like, that season. It was all about kind of like getting those people there. And, you know, whether it was called Glory or the Valley Beyond or whatever it was, she pretty much shepherded all the people in there. And then she took this moment at the very end of the season, which you highlighted before we got on the podcast today, Andy. At the end of season 2, episode 10, she redirects the beam that's going to send the Valley Beyond wherever it sends it physically.
Yeah.
And she's the only person who knows where it is. She's the gatekeeper. She's the guardian,
you know,
and that's what she do. Yeah,
she's like the digital Ellis Island.
Okay,
I don't know. I'm just taking this analogy to like its furthest extreme. Sorry.
I think some other potential definitions we have here are, you mentioned Dolores, and as the character of Charlotte Hale, she actually exiles William, right? Puts him into a cell, a place where he, you know, is, he doesn't know truth from reality, and he's sequestered away. And on the other hand, we have Sorak, who is talking about freedom and trying to tempt Maeve on, you know, what the future holds for her and what a sort of freedom of existence can be. So you sort of have that.
Although he does threaten her with locking her into his cell forever too.
That's true. Right? So you have this sort of duality from both these characters who, you know, we'll see how they ultimately, you know, combat each other, being protagonists and antagonists question is which is which, right?
Right. So that's a big point. What's fair is foul, and what's foul is fair, right? That's an old Shakespeare quote. And, you know, we walked into the season, and I've been using the term big bad to describe Vincent Cassella's Ciroc. You know, he's got the scraggly beard. He's got the French accent. You know, he's just prototypical bad guy. Meanwhile, you've got Fair Dolores, right? But, I mean, let's face it. If you had a choice, whose side would you be on if you were living in 2050? The side of the guy who wants to stop the maniacal robot with her copies, or the side of the maniacal robot with her copies, right? Like, so it's unclear who the bad guy is here. And I think that's and it also, like, what is bad? Like, they got, like, you know, Dolores has legitimate grievances, but Ciroc is also, he's not exactly pure of heart, right? He doesn't have a true north. He's basically like, I'm all about figuring out this Delos data so I can, you know, do what I want to do. So it's interesting.
I love that the gray area that all of these protagonists live in. There is no clear cut black or white, as you know, as has been portrayed in this show numerous times by the color coding of, like, the hats and you know.
Well, William's always been pretty dark.
I guess
Black Hat.
I guess, but he was. He started white. He started white and swerved to black. So you see,
yeah, because he was jilted by a robot lover. Like, he's not a good guy. He's like a Me Too disaster.
Indeed.
All right. So one of the things that struck me was Dolores and Bernard and that kind of memory in Arnold's house.
Yeah.
She said to him, "You taught me that anything is possible. We can be whoever we want, live however we want. Isn't that what you believe?" And when she said that, it struck me both at the time and then I remembered it later, because that's kind of what Dolores is doing, right? She's like, anything's possible, meaning I can take over this world even if there's only five of us. We can be whoever we want. She's literally whoever she wants to be, right? She's spread herself out across Hale, across Connell. And we can live however we want. I mean, look at her lifestyle, right? Not that she's a human wanting human things, but the lifestyle that she has had to adopt in order to get the kind of power she wants to get is living how most people want to live, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, isn't that what you believe? And so whether or not Bernard believes that, I don't know. What I do know is that she has taken from his lessons this idea that for whatever he's been saying to her, that's what she's sucked up. That's what she's taken. Whether it's misinterpretation or different interpretation or real interpretation, she's taken this idea that, like, anything's possible. I can be whoever I want. I can live however I want. And, you know, Bernard is a pretty humble guy. And Dolores, as she is now, like, you know, the blonde Dolores, as opposed to the other versions of her, she's anything but humble. So I thought that was worth bringing up. Andy, what were you gonna say?
I think so. What's interesting here is that when Bernard and Stubbs are in the Victorville Motel, Bernard believes that Dolores's plot, her scheme, is to kill and replace Dempsey with a host, which killing and replacing key figures of the corporate world and replacing them with a host is exactly the plot of Future World, the 1976 movie that is the official sequel to Westworld, the 1974 movie that this series is based on. So we've come full circle to referencing Future World directly once again.
Which is why I don't think it's going to happen. Right? I don't think that Dempsey's her target, and I don't think so for two reasons. Three reasons now. One, I feel like when we have these kinds of shows that are adaptations of previous work, they often like to nod to things that happened in the past, in the past versions, without chasing them down and doing the exact same thing. So the first reason I don't think it's going to happen is I think that was more of a nod than a hint that's where we're going. The second thing is that I think they established this blood marker thing. They laid that on pretty thick this episode, right? The idea that there's like a hashtag in your body, whatever. And previously, when Dolores was almost dead, realized she can like kind of do any. She can do, you know, she needs blood, whatever. If she doesn't have blood, she does. But we also know that host blood is not human blood. And if it was as simple as just, you know, popping the blood into her own body, she would have had one of, you know, she's got a pearl line out there somewhere. She would have had one of her people do it. But no, she had to put it into another human. Mm-hmm. So I think that the whole blood marker thing might get in the way. But then again, now that you can copy yourself, who knows what the blood marker thing is really, right? Like watch them say, oh, no, you, yeah. You can copy the blood. That's kind of where the frustration shows up for us. But yeah. The third thing. Go ahead.
No, I think what you might be saying for the third thing is she already stole all his money. So why does she still need him?
I mean, he still has access to the system. But yeah, I do think that's part of it. But the third thing I was going to say is Bernard is talking to Connells.
Yeah.
That is Dolores. And he goes, quote, I thought she would have changed Liam, but she's keeping him in play. Yeah. She must need him for something. So she changed you instead. So not that Bernard knows exactly what's going on. I mean, sure. He got it wrong, right? He got it wrong. But as he's working through it, it seems to me that he might be onto something. So as unreliable a narrator as any in this show is mm-hmm. Bernard. Mm-hmm. That said, I mean, what door? that said, he knows Dolores pretty well. So the fact that she's keeping Liam around means that she must need him for something. Now, who knows why she wanted to kidnap him this episode? Maybe she doesn't. Maybe she got to a point where she could replace him. I don't know. But that's kind of I think where we are. So I mean, I thought that was it's a pretty interesting. Like the good news about it is that it's unpredictable and that we don't know what'll happen next. Why does she want Liam? Why is he the MacGuffin this episode? So I'd like to kind of deal with that. The thing I wanted to bring up. That had to do with what was going on with Ciroc. We were just talking about him as a good guy or bad guy. He said this one line that I felt like was, you know, we've talked about cornerstone memories, like the thing that drives people, and in Maeve's case, it's being with her daughter. I think Ciroc revealed his cornerstone this episode, and that is that humanity's biggest threat has always been itself. Right?
You're talking about the flashback that he has of Paris being destroyed by nuclear holocaust.
Yeah. So, I mean, Maeve is trying to figure out what he wants out of all this. And he's like, you know, like, I'm not really worried about you guys necessarily, because humanity's biggest problem has always been itself. We take out ourselves. And what I'm doing, my whole raison d'etre, to use French, reason for being, is to use Rehoboam.
Yeah.
To help figure out a way to the future. And the divergences that are happening are getting in the way of my ability to do that. You guys have a great little setup here when it comes to understanding the human mind, and I want that. But the big thing that I'm trying to lay down here is that Ciroc's truth is that humanity's biggest threat has always been itself, and he wants to find a way around humanity destroying itself. That said, Tosin, you want to say something about Ciroc?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he really outlines the notion of what a host is. And we touched upon this a little bit before, where he, you know, says humans have this capacity for belief in heaven and hell, but once you're dead, there's no such thing. You know, you're dead. While for a host, they have this existence that persists, right? It persists through sort of time and space. So whatever we do to you could be considered either heaven or hell, and you will stay there forever, at least according to Ciroc. So he does seem to have some sort of foundation on his beliefs of what hosts are, his beliefs what life, and you know what, to be honest, I think we'll find out a little bit more of how that was shaped based off of his past experiences growing up as a child and seeing what he knew as his truth or his home destroyed. But I think one of the things that I found unique about some of the interaction that we have between him and Maeve is Maeve, on the other hand, is someone who doesn't really trust. She doesn't typically lay her trust in humans, and or when she does, it's only to a certain degree, and has always been willing to leave people behind. By the end of this episode, we see her clearly pitted against Dolores. While, you know, we had talked a little bit about what if she switches sides, It seems like that may not necessarily be the case right now due to some of her fury and rage that she may be having inside her. However, you know, I think there's still that case where you never know what with Maeve, what she's ultimately going to do. It's going to be in her best interest, ultimately.
I feel like she and Bernard have to do what Bernard wanted to do, and that is link up if they want to have a chance of stopping Dolores. The two of them have to link up. You know, she's clever on the street, but Bernard kind of has a 30,000-foot view, and they're going to have to do that. For Serac in order to kind of get that done. I also think it's interesting. You're talking about how for these hosts, they can have, you know, they can do heaven, they can do hell, right? Depending on what Serac wants to do with them, which kind of leads me back into this idea that the hosts, in certain ways, you know, obviously they're sort of superhuman in certain ways. They can die and come back, but they're also kind of more human than human. Like she has to now worry about her afterlife. That's crazy.
Right.
That's the thing that, like, you know, most Americans haven't worried about. I mean, in increasing numbers, Americans aren't worrying about their afterlife. Here we are. You can extrapolate that number out to 2050, where, like, basically they're at a hedonism party. Like, it's like Eyes Wide Shut done over again.
Right.
And Maeve has got to worry about going to heaven to see her daughter. So that was to me really interesting. This juxtaposition where the robots have to believe in God, but God is us.
I just wanted to bring up in this episode that if it wasn't clear that Charlotte was actually Dolores, we were dropped a lot of hints in this episode leading up to that point. Particularly, like, one of the things is, like, Charlotte helps the Man in Black shave with a straight edge, exactly like Dolores did in season 1, episode 10. The bicameral mind. I think at one point Charlotte says to Dolores. I mean, Charlotte says to the Man in Black, "You look like you've seen a ghost." And I feel like we've heard that before, maybe from the Man in Black to Dolores when he shows up again and she realizes that was William. I may be wrong about that. But also, we see a lot of different callbacks, thematic callbacks in this episode and in other episodes to previous episodes. Like, one shot in particular that I'm thinking of is we see Maeve after she's been impaled and she's bleeding into the white host fluid. And we've seen that sort of that combination of blood and white fluid several times in this series. Like, the first time that I remember was when I think Rebus was shot and he bleeds into the white milk that he has been drinking in season 1. So that's a recurring thematic element that we keep seeing over and over again. So this show is good about sort of dropping, like, not throwing things up out of nowhere. Like, it gives us plenty of hints as to what's going on and what we've seen before if you just know how to look for them.
Right. Those are, like, visual hints. That's cool because, you know, you can do that a lot in a book. You can do that with a lot of words, but they don't have to use words to do that. And I thought that was pretty powerful. In fact, one of the things that I remember sticking in my mind was during the introduction to the show, the theme, you know, they show that mitosis situation, right? The cells dividing and dividing and dividing. And then that's exactly what came to mind when you find out through those fast cuts, those quick cuts, that Dolores is, in fact, in all of those different... those different beings. So she's in all these places. So she's divided herself up, right? And then there's this idea that, one, Dolores went through the looking glass. We talked about that in the first episode of Vine Delights this season. But then there's also the fact that when you see that in the introduction to the show and the theme, you see this kind of host reaching up toward her reflection, and she becomes part of her reflection before she kind of separates herself out. And we know that while Hale is Dolores, the Hale body is changing Dolores. So you've got this idea that, like, Dolores has these mirrored images of herself, but they're not all exactly the same. right?
Yeah.
In fact, they don't even seem to be interconnected. It's not like Skynet, where all the robots are following the same orders, you know? Like, Dolores is, the blonde Dolores is definitely in charge, but there seems to be some independent will across the...
Oh, yeah, we've seen that with Charlotte.
With the exception of her being able to say, you know, drop the emotional subroutine or whatever.
Right. We're
still, like, independent versions. So that was interesting. Speaking of freedom.
Yeah.
The man in black is having this discussion with his daughter, and she says a quote that I thought was really powerful. She goes, "Are you free and evil, or blameless and helplessly enslaved?" Right? She creates this dichotomy about what you can be. Are you free and evil, or blameless and helplessly, or helplessly enslaved? And I feel like when he's sitting at the end of the episode, when he's sitting in his fancy schmancy, insane asylum.
Yeah.
That's got to be the question he's asking himself over and over and over. You know, he's seeing a picture. He's seeing Dolores walk up, and she's saying, you know, this is what your daughter wanted for you. She wanted you to have to deal with your decisions. At the same time, he's like, I thought you were a host. Meanwhile, Hale is saying, we manipulated you. So I think that's his central question here. You know, is he free and evil? And I would suggest that the man is evil. Or is he blameless and helplessly enslaved? I feel like being helplessly enslaved for the man in black is a refuge from having to deal with the enormity of his acts. But at the same time, his ego won't let him admit that he could be helplessly enslaved. So, yeah, it's an interesting impasse for that character.
Tosin, you wanted to add on to that?
Yeah, so I think the other thing that I found pretty interesting about this episode is, as you know, the last episode was called The Absence of Field, and we discussed, you know, the meaning of that poem and some of its origins. And I see a lot of that in The Man in Black and William, as he's kind of struggling to figure out what's reality and what's fiction in his world. And he, you know, sees images of his daughter Emily, who, you know, asks him, like, hey, how can you ever be sure? Or, you know, talks about, like, hey, if he's just another machine. Even Dolores questions, you know, you still don't understand who you are. While William asks, finally, am I me? So he's trying to figure out what it means to be himself, what the fate versus reality that we see, whether or not he is just another sort of numerical value, another one and zero, or if he is more than that. And you kind of see the breakdown of this guy who, you know, first started off as an individual who wasn't confident at all, and learned and developed along the way, fell in love and became this sort of darker, more sinister individual. And now he's at his end, at his search for what the meaning of the maze is. He is now lost within it and not sure what his meaning is, what his identity is.
I mean, she's asking him to question the nature of his reality, which is like one of the longest running themes of this show. So just calling back to sort of like themes that we keep hitting over and over again on this show. You know, what is the nature of your reality? I think that's the ultimate question that the man in black has to answer for himself. I have no idea where his story is going from this point, because it kind of feels
right, because he was kind of a mess and it feels like he got hit in a dead end. But then again, you can see him getting out of this. It's just how.
Exactly. I wanted to also point out just a little nice little touch of like the showrunners dropping clues.
Inside joke.
On us. Inside jokes, as it were. The distillery that Sato, aka Musashi, aka Dolores, runs in Singapore is called the Itaidoshin Distillery. And Itaidoshin is a Buddhist concept, which means separate bodies, one mind. And come on, man. If there isn't...
Yeah.
A more like on the nose a hint about what's going on with the nature of Dolores, I don't know what is.
Yeah, it was great. Also, what was cool was, you know, again, it's all side quests when it comes to to Maeve, but I did find it interesting that she brought the mortician with her for this so-called introduction to the Yakuza. And when she gets there, she says this crucial, crucial thing, which is the new boss is really crazy and hardcore. And you're like, okay. And it's like, I don't know, you always talk about Chekhov's gun. Those phrases to me are like Chekhov's gun. Okay, the new boss. Got to hold on to that. Let me put that in my pocket because that's going to become a thing later. So when Musashi walks in, I'm like, oh, the new, I get it. Okay. She just laid out that this is this is not Yakuza as usual. There's been a bit of a takeover. Yeah. And then we find out when Maeve breaks that barrel open why there's been a takeover. I mean, Dolores's plan is extensive and power, and you know, it's just it's mind-bogglingly complex.
Dwayne, you wanted to talk about the Maeve's ability to control things?
Yeah, so you know, this struck me as, you know, this is a moment where she's walking through Singapore, and Andy, you had said that it kind of reminded you of Ghost in the Shell. For anyone who doesn't know Ghost in the Shell, there's this it's this fantastic anime from the 1990s, and it deals with cyborgs and other things, but it takes place in this city, which we assume is Tokyo, in the far-flung future. And for about a minute and a half through in the middle of the movie, it just takes a break. You know, it just does this thing where it's just establishing shots of this city set to music. And it's just a beautiful scene. And when Maeve is walking through, just for it's like 15 seconds when Maeve is doing it. She's walking through and her cyborginess is feeling out. It's like reaching out with its feelings. And later on when she starts fighting with the Yakuza guys, what's really impressive is that she's got this ability to control things. And if you had like, you know, Robbie the Robot or even Small Wonder in the 80s, you know, a robot was autonomous completely, right? You know, Asimov's robots were autonomous completely.
Sure.
But in the 2050s, right, an AI with the tool set that Maeve has wouldn't need to fight on our terms. She wouldn't need to be super strong as much as she needs to control things. So, you know, she's got Bluetooth, she's got Wi-Fi, she's got cellular, whatever the equivalents are in the 2050s. Yeah. So she can just say, oh, you've got a connected gun? Thank you. That's my gun now. Oh, you've got a connected lock. Thank you. That's my lock now.
Yeah.
Which is a different strategy, Andy, you were saying, than Dolores' strategy, which seems to have been to either create or appropriate some sort of AI that has access to all these crazy APIs that can do things like, you know, get her a suite in a hotel, rent an apartment, you know, acquire a bike, that kind of thing. So they're both using their incredible skills to code in real time in order to get what they want in the moment. And I thought that was pretty great, because while Dolores is like, I'm gonna have to kill everybody or like beat up Stubbs or whatever, Maeve is like, yeah, I'm gonna have to fight, but only when the weapon is one that I can't control myself, which seems almost more badass. It's not really more bad, but it's almost more
I feel
badass.
Like, so it's a logical sort of real world extension of her Westworld ability to control the other hosts with her mind.
Right. But which is interesting because she doesn't have that body anymore, right?
Right.
So they took the pearl out of that body and they remade a new body for her. And based on the specs, I would imagine, but still, that's definitely a thing. What was also interesting about Maeve is her innocence, right?
Yeah.
So even though Maeve is, you know, she's a madam, she's, for lack of a better term, street smart. She was the only host that was going to be able to walk out of Westworld all on her own, after like kind of hacking herself and making herself super powerful. She is super clever, but she's there with Serac, and Serac is talking to this information broker, and he threatens to hurt him. And she's like, you're going to hurt his children? Aren't they part of your tribe? Right. And by that, she means this whole situation is because you're trying to control my people being in your world. And that's obviously because you love your people. And so she's like, are you going to hurt his children? Aren't they part of your tribe? And he's like, I'm not going to do anything to them. The world can be a very cruel place, which to me showed that as much as Serac is like, humanity is the thing that's going to hurt himself.
Yeah.
He's totally willing to be a human hurting humans to get there. And it's anathema to her, because you don't see in the Westworld seasons 1, 2 and 3, there's not a lot of fundamental fighting between hosts, right? The host on host, like there's a couple times when, you know, somebody shoots a couple hosts that have gone awry or something like that. You were talking about the dude with the milk earlier. But for the most part, in terms of like factions of hosts, you didn't see, except for the what's it called, the I think it was the Ghost Nation versus the Army thing. That was a thing, but that was kind of like clued into their narratives.
Sure.
What you did see was a lot of hosts getting together and attacking QA in season two. So I don't know. I just felt like this whole situation is one where Maeve was like, aren't you gonna, like, why would you hurt his children? You know, and he's like, well, you know, things happen because that's how humanity is. She doesn't really.
Was he like just showing really him like a preview of what Rehoboam would extrapolate as to what would happen to him if he
that
didn't comply?
That was my thinking. Because Rehoboam has mapped out everybody's future. So all you have to do is show, give Rehoboam a little guidance and say, you know, how can we make this future look pretty terrible?
Yeah.
And Rehoboam would generate a somewhat realistic layout of what would happen to this person's family, you know? So that was crazy. I was a little surprised he killed the guy. I was a little surprised he killed him, but
he said he was a traitor to his race, a traitor to his kind. You know,
he was a traitor to your kind, but I was going to, like, I don't know, kill your wife and children. So, you know, he's
clearly Serac's morals are not
dark hero.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he's a hero, he's a very, very dark one.
Right.
Yeah. So the last thing is something we've talked about pretty much every episode this season is computers and their vulnerabilities on display once more. So, you know.
Yeah.
Bernard, when he needed to figure out where Dempsey was going to be, he says, so I hacked his car service because he couldn't break into any other thing without being tracked. He was able to break into that.
That was great because he was like, Stubbs was like, you hacked into like the one of the wealthiest men in the world's like systems? He's like, no, I couldn't do that, so I hacked his car service, which was so practical. That was so Mr. Robot, which is what Bernard is.
Right. It reminds you of... The hack that occurred on, was it WhatsApp for Jeff Bezos, if you recall?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he
talked
had
about it on right. Our other podcast, actually, The Drill Down. But it's just interesting to show some sort of dynamic where there's that weakness. There's always that vulnerability that people have, that blind spot.
And that's fundamentally what Maeve is doing when she's controlling things, right? So when I say she's writing code in real time, you know, you've got the consciousness of a human being, like these hosts are, but she also has access to the connectivity, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, cellular, whatever they've got going on over there. And on top of that, she has the resources at her command of, you know, computer, like a terminal, and all the power, all the computational power that a host would have to have. So when she's controlling those guns and other things, like, and then the lights and the lock, she's literally looking through the code for an exploit. She's exploiting it, and she's doing all that in real time. And that's kind of what's happening here. While Bernard is clacking away on a terminal in order to get into like the car service, you know, Maeve is doing it with the blink of an eye. And that's what's so cool about it. That's what's
so
powerful about it.
This kind of bleeds more into the big picture thing, but I feel like once again we have hammered home the motif of working with remotes. We have Bernard once again using a remote to attempt to control the Liam host, which he believes Dolores had built, and we have Serac once again showing Maeve his control over her, his handheld like kill switch control over her. So we get that that thematically repeated once again.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Of course, we also have Dolores stealing Dempsey's money and the way they sort of hack the system and to get their way through.
There's a lot of hacking going on in this new world.
Totally. I mean, that's what's going on in our world, too. It's also interesting because, you know, she had to hack that other guy to get started. Her startup cash was hacking that other guy in the beginning. And we still don't know how she hacked that other guy's security system. Was she using that little thing on her earlobe, or was she doing something more akin to me? We just don't know. But the whole thing here that I think is key is that these robot people are recognizing machines for what they are. They're friends.
Or
their tools.
Or tools, yeah. Certainly.
And they're using them. And there was that moment in the last episode when Hail Auris looked up at the riot control mecca. Remember? Yeah. And it was the look that said, oh, you're mine. Oh, I know exactly what to do with you. And at first you're like, okay, she probably has some level of control over that thing. You know, not for nothing, they're both made by Delos, and you know every company that makes devices is going to use similar code for those devices. I mean, look at the way Apple does things, look at the way Microsoft does things, whatever. Well,
this is also like smart AI using dumb AI. You know, right. Using an assistant, using tools that don't have sentience or independent thought. Smart AI using those tools, seeing them for what
aware AI, because levels of smartness, I guess, are subjective, but it's right. Totally aware AI mm-hmm. versus like, you know, lockdown, you know, held down AI, that kind of thing. But yeah.
We've got some unanswered questions, as we do in every episode. And last episode, we started off with Pearl roll call. And I feel like, first of all...
first of all...
I feel like this episode, we pretty much had our roll call more or less answered. With the exception of maybe one pearl, so we know that five pearls were taken out of the park by Dolores in her purse, in her pearl purse. So we got Bernard, who's the red pearl. We got Hale, who is Dolores. We got Connells, who is Dolores. Musashi, who is also Dolores.
Hey, he's also Dolores.
So that's four pearls. We have one pearl unaccounted for and one host body that we know that she printed that we don't know who that host body is. So we have one...
You know she printed five host bodies.
Yes.
Because we saw the screen that Ciroc showed.
Yep.
And then... Yeah. Well, also, that was weird because... Okay, so she does this in his house.
Yeah.
And I think we all assume the house was kind of a base of operations, which it isn't. And then Ciroc is like just able to walk in, you know?
You know what I assume from that is that Ciroc, once he tracked down that's where the divergence was coming from, he probably bought the property, just bought it outright.
Right. But the fact that Dolores would sell it. You know, I would think she'd use her assistant to do that, whatever. I don't know. It just struck me as like, that's their hideout, but it's not their hideout. And it was foolish of me to think it was their hideout.
Not anymore. I had a question. So when we meet this is just a world building question, really. When we meet the mortician, we see her removing electronic parts from inside these corpses. You think those corpses are, I mean, those devices that she's removing are the devices that infuse human blood with these personal ID hash keys that we keep seeing, people exploiting? Because people aren't born with these ID hashed keys, right?
Yeah, it all depends. It could be that your DNA sequence is the basis of the hash, right? Mm. Whenever you make a hash of something, you take a phrase or whatever, and then you hash it, right? You run it through SHA-256, whatever. It's encryption stuff. It's gobbledygook, technobabble, but it could be that, or it could be this. You know, something has to, you know, maybe there is something going on there. But I think the idea was that people are modified, that the technology, you're seeing people walking around and you're not seeing them with like Borg-like stuff over their eyes or hands or whatever. But people are modified. They're using technology in their bodies. They're all comfortable with it because it's 30 years from now, and that's kind of what you do. So, that was a – I don't know, but I think it was a good established – world-building established thing to just kind of show that people are full of tech, right? It's very neuromancer. What was your next question?
Yeah, so also when when Maeve interrogates the mortician, she says that Dolores asked the mortician to smuggle out bodies, which she doesn't do, but she forwarded him to the Yakuza. Was there clarity in this episode as to why she was asking her to smuggle out bodies, or is that just something that is we're putting a pin in that for a future episode? I don't know what the goal Dolores would have to smuggle bodies out would be.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I'm very curious what happens with that. I think we're definitely going to be putting a pin on that, but I mean, it does give her more personalities to impersonate, so it doesn't have to be some sort of character within the chain. It can be someone else, a side character, someone unknown, and maybe even some of the things that we saw.
Maybe even Caleb.
Yeah. That too.
I don't think it's Caleb. It'd be terrible if it were Caleb. But
I'm not predicting that one.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting because so we know that she had she only wanted one identity of the Ukrainian girl that died because she had to create an identity for the blonde version of herself. So far, the other versions of herself that are out there have identities. She's just taken them over. Hale, Connells, maybe not Musashi, actually. Musashi, she had to figure something out. But he's an underground, underworld figure.
Sure.
So he may not necessarily need a legitimate cover.
Right.
So I think what they're doing there is just leaving just a bit more mystery for us. It's not going to be super easy to figure out who number five is. I feel like we're watching Battlestar Galactica with the final five.
You know,
the biggest disappointment and all of that.
I think maybe number five could still be Teddy. And I was about to, you know, before we saw this episode, I was about to posit that that Charlotte was Teddy. And I actually had a whole like list of reasoning from season 2, episode 10 to track that. And then when we realize that Charlotte is Dolores, I'm like, well, there goes that theory. But we do know that there is one pearl outstanding and one body that she made that hasn't been revealed yet. And I think maybe my Teddy is still out there theory it still holds. And let me just lay this out for you guys so that you can track how I came to that conclusion. In season 2, episode 10, we see her putting a pearl on this holder in the forge, and she says, "I've got one last host to bring with me to the new world." And then we don't see who that host is. But later on in the episode, Charlotte as Dolores delivers this monologue saying, you know, the worst of us survived and the best of us were left behind. And you see these unrelated shots of that host ball on the holder. And then you see a shot of Teddy standing in what looks like the Valley Beyond by himself. And I think we were meant to infer from that Teddy was in the Valley Beyond, but it's never spelled out explicitly that Dolores sent Teddy to the Valley Beyond. That's just an inference that we're pulling from those shots and her voiceover. So I think maybe because
and the writers could have been there. The writers could have thought about that and wanted that as an option back 2 years ago during season 2, which is why that's open. And then said, maybe we're going to go in a different direction. Because that happens a lot when you're trying to put these.
Sure. You sort of leave these pins there to like, maybe we'll bring it back, maybe we won't. But the fact that when she puts this blank pearl on the holder and says, "I have one more, I'm changed my mind. I have one more host to bring with me to bring to the new world," which I think at the time we assumed the new world was the Valley Beyond. But it's clear now that the new world is this world. So she's got a host with her that isn't her. And I think that is who that last pearl is. We don't know who it is. I think maybe it's still Teddy.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Why would you spend the time and energy to go to that Valley Beyond thing? I mean, Bernard says this is in season 2, episode 10.
Yeah.
About an hour and 12 minutes into it. And Bernard is like, what are you going to do with all the hosts? They're all on the computer. And she's like, she says that stuff you just said. I need to bring somebody in. And so the idea that one of those, you know, why would she suck that person down? We know it wasn't Maeve because her ball was stolen.
Yep.
Why would she suck that person down if not to take them with her? The only thing that throws me off from that is this idea that Hale can look at the balls and recognize who they were, apparently.
Well,
she brought him.
Yeah, well, that's because in that same...
Well, I mean, Hale has Dolores's brain, so she knows what she did.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, and next question. Serac has waited many, many years for the hosts to arrive. Does that mean he did anything to help their escape? He certainly helped Maeve's escape. And from what we know, it looks like, you know, he had somebody on the inside, and it wasn't just Hale. But original Hale may have been the one to orchestrate the stealing of Maeve's HCU, her pearl, and get it to Serac. But the question is, he's been seeing this coming for a while. And maybe that's because he's tasked Rehoboam to figure it out, or maybe
that's
because of Data.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that that's the case. I think when he says, I've waited many years for the host to arrive, I think he's drawing conclusions from what Rehoboam has revealed to him.
Right. So the whole thing there that's interesting to me is that he's been waiting for this to happen. And is it something that he's been waiting so he could do something about it and stop it? Or is it an opportunity or whatever? Which leads to the next question. Well, I don't know if you think it's Rehoboam, that's cool.
That makes it a very interesting question, whether or not he believes in fate or believes that he has some sort of ability to change the future. Because now that you lead this question that he's waited many years, it kind of makes me seem like maybe he sees Rehoboam's plan for himself and thinks that he can just follow that path.
Yeah, it's weird and funny, and I thought it was a strange thing to say, but it was supposed to kind of convey how much foresight and power he has through Rehoboam. So that was pretty strange. And then next, you know, Serac feels like, I said it before, he feels like the big bad, but he may be the big good. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
I mean, it depends on whose point of view you're looking at this from. I think Serac believes that he has built Rehoboam and wants more Data in order to guide humanity toward a place that it can survive. Although he tells Maeve straight off that there's no world where hosts and humans can survive together. But I don't know that that means that fate of humanity is cursed from Rehoboam's prognostications.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was powerful that he said there's no world where we live together. I think he's kind of right. I mean, let's look at the history of humanity. There was another type of human running around, the Neanderthals, and we effectively wiped them out by either killing them or absorbing them. The scientists are still trying to figure that out. But there's just not a lot of room for two intelligent species, especially when one is far more intelligent than the other.
Yep.
So there's that. I mean, that's the classic situation. But he is saying, I have a place for you. It's virtual, but it shouldn't matter to you, right?
Right.
You know, it shouldn't matter to you. But meanwhile, I got to save this place here. So that said, you know, we've all seen the end of Ex Machina, where Ava kind of walks out into the world and you wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine a world where Dolores really gets away with this, as opposed to ending in tragedy for Dolores, where she's close to winning, but she doesn't. You know, it's just hard for me to see this coming across as a satisfying, realistic-ish ending with Dolores, like, having destroyed all of humanity. Like, you know, I just don't see that, you know, that kind of thing. Not to make predictions by the end of the show. It's, you know, God knows how many years it'll be until that happens. But, I just feel like that was an interesting way to look at things. And so I do wonder if Serac is actually the good guy here.
I have to say, just before we move on to the next thing, just on top of that, Serac offering Maeve this heaven of this world where she can be with her daughter. That reminds me of the scene with Bernard and Dolores in the forge, where you know, Bernard says that this is a world where the hosts can live in, you know, you can be happy here too. And Dolores is like, basically she says that world is just another false promise, you know?
Dolores wants to live in the analog world, whereas Maeve is like, I could be in the fake.
Yeah, but Serac is offering her that false promise of this idyllic world that isn't.
Well, it's Dolores's false promise. That doesn't mean it's everybody's false promise, right? Mm. It's like there are plenty of people in our world who believe in the afterlife, who believe in religion, and plenty of people in our world who don't. They think that it's a false promise that you need to live for now. So in this scenario, to use the analogy, Maeve is a believer. She's like, I'm a machine life. I don't need to be in the physical world to be.
I can see that.
Whereas Dolores, I mean, she's copying her brain ball, right? So how much does she need to be in the physical world? You know, she knows inherently that she's a digital being. Like, I feel like it's Dolores' interpretation that it's a false promise. One more question for me, and it's not a big deal, but I didn't get why the middleman data broker was so loyal to Dolores. He's like, you know, who did you sell the data to, or what did you sell her, or whatever. He's like, I'm not telling. And I'm like, dude, she's a random person who paid you some money. You've got, blood all over your face from getting beat by people. They've got guns. You've got a family. Like, why was he? I just felt like he was one of those characters that is definitely a throwaway character. I just didn't get his motivation. He seemed unreal. But I mean, he was the doorway to the whole side quest. But I just didn't get it. And I felt that was one of the weaker parts of the episode for me.
Tosin, you had one last question.
Yeah, the final question I have is, why did Hale take William's blood? And Andy, I know you noted that it could also have been her injecting him with something.
I mean, we have to go by what we see. And what we see is a needle come out of her finger and her piercing the skin and then some blood, a drop of blood coming out of his neck. I think that was to indicate that the needle definitely pierced his skin. Whether that is her drawing some of his blood or DNA or her injecting him with something, I couldn't say. and the bigger question is why? I don't know. We'll find out.
I mean, I felt like they were establishing the whole marker thing a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, they had established that you need this like kind of weird marker in someone's blood. And then obviously Williams is a pretty big deal. So that's kind of where I was going with that one. That's kind of how I was feeling about it.
Well, we'll find out. We will for sure find out the answer to that question. Let's talk about some of our big picture ideas. These are of larger themes that we touch upon in this season and in the entire series. So first of all, I wanted to say, as far as the season goes, it feels like, if it wasn't already clear from the episodes that we've seen up until this point, it was clear to me in this episode that the goal of the protagonists, Serac and Dolores, this season is to gain company control of Delos and the data they mined from Westworld. I think that's the end point that we're reaching towards the end of this season. What they do with that data, I have no idea. But I think that's the big picture goal of this season.
Last season, it was kind of like this Valley Beyond thing, and that was really nebulous and a little painful. But this is basically like, okay, Serac says he wants to save humanity, and he basically, this flows into what I was going to say.
Yeah.
He basically created Rehoboam to map humanity so he could find a way to hack humans. Like, if I know what a mind is like, I can find a way to convince all the minds to do the right thing. Save us from ourselves and bring us to the future. And so the question is, as you're posing it, I think, is that really what he wants, or is there something else in there? I mean, anyone who can hack the future like that is going to make a lot of money, and obviously someone like Serac is interested in that. But is his motivation as pure as he says it is? Is it the reason why he behaves the way he does? Whereas Dolores, you know, she is obviously trying to get into Rehoboam as well.
Yeah.
She believes that the system is that the world that we live in is so easy to fracture and break because we're so weak. And you know, you said it earlier. She thought our world would be different from hers, but the idea of like having a party that exploits people's bodies, where rich people exploit like other humans' bodies, it's the same shit that she was dealing with back in Westworld.
Yeah. So, yeah. So just to add to that,
the question is like.
Yeah. So just to add to that, as part of my sort of big picture point about that, is we hear when Dolores brings Caleb to this escort auction charity ball, whatever this weird, you know, strange.
It's a prostitution charity ball.
Yeah. So
you bid up for a prostitute, so you get to have sex with them, and then, you know, the money goes somewhere good, it seems.
Why is it that like all of these, like what was that Stanley Kubrick movie you mentioned?
Eyes Wide Shut.
Eyes Wide Shut. Why is it that like these super rich secret parties are always like creepy and not fun?
I know, like the one girl was like, okay, I'm at this creepy party. I guess this is what society's doing. I'm gonna get high and take a trip elsewhere. So I'm gonna go out to this party. I'm gonna dress up. I'm gonna put the makeup on, the shoes on, everything, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna sit around while other people have sex, and get on a trip. So I see like random shit because I don't actually want to be here anyway. So yeah, I mean, these parties are never fun.
Yes.
I guess the whole point is that like you hit a certain level of wealth and you don't know what to do with your money.
Right.
And more important from all that, you know, hedonism is apparently what Hollywood wants to tell us the wealthy do. You know,
yes.
They do this hedonistic stuff because they just want to feel something, but they don't end up feeling anything. I don't know.
Yes. So
that's my. That seems to be the message that they're shooting out there.
But just as a larger point,
the random woman in the tails with like her vagina, just like, hey.
As a larger point, the Dolores says to Caleb when she's seeing these people being auctioned off for pleasure, she says, "I thought your world would be so different than mine, but there isn't any difference at all." Which speaks to a larger theme of the entire series. Of essentially, this series is about. It details the exploitation of one sentient class of people for the pleasure of another class of people, and that's what we're seeing.
Which is what humanity's been doing,
exactly,
forever, right?
I mean, exactly.
That's pretty much what slavery was and all that stuff. So, like, people want power, and when you get power, you're like, you're still a human, so you want to experience. What that brings you, and if you know you can hire someone who's really good at carnal pleasure, then you're gonna, I guess, do it. You know,
so
clearly the barriers on prostitution have been lowered by the 2050s, according to this.
Clearly,
so are you saying that the good guy actually is Dolores because she is potentially breaking the system while Sorak and others are still exploiting it?
Maybe.
I mean, it's to be determined, but at the end of the day. I mean, you can watch The Sopranos and they have high moral values on some things and like no moral values on others, right? So there's just, it's not as simple as saying that because she doesn't like the exploitation of human bodies for pleasure by the rich, she's also going to try to make it a better world for us. I mean, she seems to want to destroy our world.
Yeah.
Wholesale.
Dwayne, you wanted to finish off with this last big picture thought?
Yeah, Sorak told Maeve, and we mentioned it before, that there's no path for her kind sharing a world. Yet that's exactly what Dolores is trying to do, right? We just talked about how she wants to about humanity, right? So she infiltrates the Yakuza, and it seems super random. Why would you have the Yakuza, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, we don't actually know she infiltrates the Yakuza until after Maeve has shown us that the barrels are actually full of what's it called, of the substrate that makes the hosts.
Yeah.
So once Maeve shows that, you're like, oh, that's interesting. This has to do with this is part of the plot. And then you realize the person running it is Musashi, and you're like, okay, so he's the one. His leg of this stool is designed to help her, you know, make more bodies, make more of this stuff. And so that's that was really interesting to me.
But why is the question?
Sorak is saying, well, I think if she wants to take over the human world, she's going to have to do it she's going to need an army. And that army might be just her.
Yeah.
Like millions of hers or thousands of hers. Or she might, you know, she blamed Mei for leaving everyone behind, right?
Yeah.
She, in the form of Musashi, blamed Mei for leaving everyone behind. And if that's how she feels, then perhaps the thing that's going on there is that she intends, now that she knows where all the mines are, where all the hosts are,
yeah,
she intends to go retrieve them once she has what she needs in order to give them real flesh and form in the real world. So that could very well.
Yeah. The white fluid is essentially to create hosts that can live in this external world, this real external world. I guess my question is, coexist with humans or kill all the humans and then replace them with these hosts and have the
host? I think definitely not coexist with humans, but not necessarily replace humans with hosts. I think there's a way to remove humans. And then just build host bodies. What's really interesting about this is that the hosts want to be in bodies, right? So from Dolores' perspective, being fully realized is to have one of these two legs, two arms, bodies. Where as a digital being, you think that being in a computer, as long as you get to have some control over the environment, you'd be fine as well. But Dolores is really about being in these bodies. And maybe part of that's based on the character that she had, the role she had to play for so long, this person in the outdoors with horses and so on and so forth, you know, just always being in wide open spaces. I don't know, but it just seems like she's interested in bringing everyone back. She knows where she put them, and she's creating the materials so she can do that and bring them back in a way that they're not, their heads aren't going to explode when they walk out of the park. Maybe she wants to put the humans in the park.
That would be an ironic twist.
That could be the ending of the show.
All right, let's talk about some of the technical aspects of the show. This is usually where we discuss stuff like music, acting, sound effects. Most often we use it to cover the music, which is just, you know, phenomenal. I think Ramin Djawadi is doing he's just killing it with the synth score. But this episode, he did an orchestral cover of The Weeknd's Wicked Games in that Eyes Wide Shut, you know, escort auction, that weird escort auction. And the lyrics to that song are—it's just basically about a guy who's depressed about some lost love, and he's hitting bottom, trying to drown his sorrows. Which I feel like mirrors what's going on with Liam in that scene,
or is literally every weekend,
weekend song ever. And we also hear like when Ciroc activates Maeve in that Singapore bar, the pianist in the background is playing Mysterions by Portishead, and I couldn't, you know, fathom what the connection was. There's lyrics that go, inside you're pretending crimes have been swept aside somewhere where they can forget, and maybe that's channeling Ciroc himself and his rage about humanity, the ugliness of humanity, and how he intends to fix it. Who knows?
Yeah, but in doing so, he also exposes his ugliness too.
This is true. This is true. And just a nothing point here, but I noticed that twice two different actors said the word authentication when the subtitles, reading the subtitles, they said authentication. And I thought maybe they had created this portmanteau of a word to as like a futuristic thing, and authentication, identification, and then somewhere along the way they were like, ah, forget it, we'll just put authentication in the subtitles. It's too confusing to create a new world. The
subtitles are often machine learning.
That's true.
So I wouldn't read too much into that.
Let's talk about some of the ephemera. These are just external links, extra textual stuff that help round out add to what we saw in this episode. And Dwayne, you wanted to talk about a movie that you feel like had a little bit of a connection to this episode.
Yeah, so the blonde version of Dolores more and more came across as this like destructor robot thing. So she's taking out Stubbs, she's pushing the guy against the wall. She's she's a hard body, right? And yeah. One of the things that it really reminded me of is this ancient and mostly forgotten movie, Terminator 3, when they turned the Terminator character into a female. And she had to be, you know, what they had to do was find a way to make a female come across as strong and powerful as effectively Arnold Schwarzenegger had in the previous movies. And they did a really good job. And I feel like if you want to see some badass female robot kicking ass, that's a film to check out. Just, you know, grudge the plot and just wait for the action scenes. And that's pretty good. Also, one of the things that really got me was Dolores's makeup in this episode was, I mean, she wasn't ashen, but she was like super perfect to the point of artificial looking in a way that doesn't, you don't really see in the other episodes. She looked super perfect in the other episodes, but you know, she was coming across as like robot-y, hardcore bad. I also thought it was cool that Maeve and Dolores were wearing these interesting outfits that weren't just, you know, the normal sort of tight dresses that they're always in. Mm-hmm. They were like, let's be practical today so we can kill people. That was their whole pantsuit thing was pretty cool. But yeah, Terminator 3, that's definitely, if you're looking, you know, we're all locked down. So
yeah.
If you're looking for something to kill some time, you know, just watch it knowing that it's worse compared to the previous two Terminator movies than the third Godfather is compared to the previous two Godfather movies. So keep that in mind.
There were really only two Terminator movies in my estimation.
Yeah, there are only really two Godfather movies as well.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up The New Colossus, which is Emma Lazarus's poem that is affixed to the Statue of Liberty, where the title comes from, you know, the Mother of Exiles. Tosin, I think you had a couple of, you had at least one movie that you wanted to bring up as a connection.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up Akira, the 1988 film. So I know you guys were talking about Maeve as she walks through Singapore, letting off those EMP blasts. It gave me thoughts of Akira, which is a Japanese animated post-apocalyptic cyberpunk film.
Yeah, what's that? 1989, maybe? It's an older film, but it's also incredible.
Yeah, it has one of the favorite bike chase scenes to start off the film that is incredible, and you see it influences a lot of actual chase scenes in the future. But part of the sort of themes you see with people particular character gaining powers and being able to kind of change the world. Mm-hmm, I don't want to spoil it too much, but I highly recommend checking this film out.
And Dwayne, round us off with one other recommendation here.
Right. So if you haven't seen it, you know, Akira, you know, 89, it's pretty much the movie that brought anime to the U.S. and maybe even Europe and stuff. But following up a few years later was the movie Ghost in the Shell. Ghost in the Shell is a huge franchise. There's the Standalone Complex, which is a series it's a TV series. There is, you know, a whole bunch of extra films, whether it's Innocence, the direct sequel, or sort of like spin-off films, whatever. But the original Ghost in the Shell film is about that kind of space between humanity and robotics. And it has some beautiful, beautiful, just, you know, incredible visuals in terms of, you know, seeing like landscapes and so on. And when you see Maeve walk through Singapore, they're really playing on that Ghost in the Shell moment. Now, to give you an idea of how Ghost in the Shell has had influence in our culture, if you've ever seen The Matrix, the original one, Ghost in the Shell is, you know, if you're cynical, you call it a ripoff. But I think I would more say that it is, The Matrix contains a lot of homages to Ghost in the Shell.
Yes. And this season of Westworld contains a lot of homages to The Matrix, as we've been seeing. So it's sort of like It's right down the family.
A whole bunch of love letters.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
So yeah, it's definitely worth seeing. Akira is a bit of a heavy hitting movie. So yeah. You have to be like an emotional space for it. Ghost in the Shell is a little lighter. But they're all great films. And Ghost in the Shell you can definitely see in English or in Japanese with subtitles, and both versions are excellent. Whereas Akira I try to watch in Japanese because it's just better. The older movies are better in Japanese. But yeah, that does it for Ephemera for me.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Violent Delights. I'm going to go around the table and ask them, starting with you, Dwayne, where can people find your work on the internet when you're not talking about Westworld?
Check me out on Twitter, twitter.com/DwayneD, DwayneD. And you can also check me out on the Jildan, right? Tosin, what about you?
Yeah, you can check me out at twitter.com/toast4321 and also on the Drill Down. What about yourself, Andy?
Yeah, you can find me at mrbabyman.com or just do a Google search for Mr. Babyman, which is my social media handle, or Andrew Sorsini. You'll find everything I'm liking and linking throughout the week here. As these other two fine gentlemen have mentioned previously, we do a weekly tech podcast called The Drill Down, which you can find at thedrilldown.com. And join us next week when we cover the fifth episode of Westworld's third season entitled Genre. I'm not sure what this title means, although in this episode, tonight's episode, Liam's friend Roderick offers him Genre, which is he calls a digital psychopharma hybrid. He says, "We'll send you straight to the silent era and back," is his quote. So it makes me think that if anyone has followed HBO's Watchmen, there was an entire episode that took place in the mind of someone who had taken a psychopharma hybrid pill. And I have a feeling that that means that we're probably going to, at least part of this next episode, we're going to see inside the mind of a character who has taken this genre, a psychopharma hybrid. So, but who knows? In any case, we'll be covering it, so tune in for the next episode of Violent Delights, and we'll see you there.